Took me a long time to get acquainted with him. I'm sure I was over the end of the blame. It wasn't his fault. It was my fault. I hadn't heard anything about him. I didn't know anything about his character, his family. Brand new man to me. And usually I'm a little slow about getting acquainted with men like that. So I took my time. It pays to get acquainted with preachers slowly. And I does. So I'm enjoying his fellowship now, and that of his family. They go out of their way to be good to me, and I appreciate it. I think they do too much. They're petting me, and they're just too good. I cannot even pay for a meal at Fuller's restaurant before I dress it. They won't let me pay a dime. They did let me pay the tip today, $1. But you people ought to reimburse him for all the money that's been out during your series of services, because he's been out a lot of money. Just last spent $18 about 2 hours ago on Norelco razor head, electric razor. Think about it, $18 for just three of those little heads. $18? Oh my, back in the 20s, you'd have bought them for 5 cents a piece. I said, what's the 20s? Well, that's way back in Noah's day. glad to see you people here tonight. There was a corny Baptist one time by the name of C.B. Cornstalk. C.B. Cornstalk. And his wife couldn't get him to go to church. She did it every little bit. She went to church every Sunday. In fact, she went every service. And old C.B. just wouldn't go. He wouldn't go. And so Mr. Cornstalk remained in rebellion. One day, she got a rolling pin after him. That's another day of a rolling pin. She got a rolling pin after him, and she forced him to go to church. And she marched him right down the front seat, and she said, right down the front. And the first man the pastor called on to pray was Mr. Cornstalk. Mr. Cornstalk was in earnest in prayer. He got out on his knees, and he drew a long breath, and he started praying. He prayed for his wife. He prayed for every church member. He prayed for his country. He prayed for the deacons in that church. He prayed for the song leader, the piano player. He prayed and he prayed and he prayed for 25 minutes. And finally, the audience got wiggling, you know, especially boys and girls, they got wiggling. And during a pause in his prayer, there was a deacon who said, Mr. C.B. looked right toward that deacon, and he said, I thank you for that. I've been trying for that ever since I started. You think of that word, you know? All right. Glad you're here tonight. Let's go to the fourth chapter of the book of Revelation. Fourth chapter of Revelation. Glad to have everybody here tonight. I appreciate you inviting me to this meeting. I appreciate it very much. The fourth chapter. We ended last night with the third chapter. We ended with the church age. And the church age is a fine age in many respects. In many respects, it's a fine age, but yet it has a lot of faults. And it's so faulty that Jesus Christ will have to come back some of these days and set this age right, set the world right. Fourth chapter of the book of Revelation. John says, after these things I looked, and behold, the door wide open into heaven, and the voice, the first which I heard as a bugle talking with me, saying, step up here, and I will point out to you what it is necessary to become after these things. Now, that's as closely and literally as I can make it from the Greek text, and yet makes sense, brethren. And that's a Baptist translation. You know, John the Revelator was a Baptist, brethren. He's a landmark missionary Baptist. And so were all those men who wrote the scriptures. Abraham was a downright missionary Baptist. I say that with pride. I say that because I'm a Baptist, you're a Baptist. We're all Baptists. We believe as Baptists. And we behave as Baptists. I mean, we're sure. sometimes the Baptist don't. But anyway, this fourth chapter here talks about a lot of people, 24 elders in the fourth verse, being around a throne. There were 24 thrones. There's a central throne, and then around the central throne there are 24 thrones. And on these 24 thrones sit 24 elders. And these elders are wearing crowns. They wear clothes in white clothes. They have crowns on their heads. They have authority. And they are right close to God the Father. So these are redeemed and raptured saints that are in heaven on the fourth tribulation period. And these 24 elders now represent all the saved of all the ages that have come up to heaven since the days of righteous Abel. That's what I believe, Ray. That's what I believe. I may be wrong, but until somebody tells me wrong, I will accept what I'm saying. These 24 elders represent all the saved people of all the ages since the days of righteous Abel. And many people have been saved in those centuries, past centuries. They're up in heaven today. And these 24 elders represent them. Let's go to chapter 5 and verses 9 and 10. And we're going to read the song sung by these 24 elders. Verse 9. And they sang a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and hast made us under our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. That's the song sung by the 24 elders. And it shows that they were redeemed out of every nation, tongue, people, tribe, everything on this earth. They were redeemed. That word redeemed there means to buy back. And that reminds me of one time in Arizona, way back in the 19th century, when Arizona was a territory. It wasn't yet a state. In the Arizona territory, there were two little Indians playing one day. One of those Indians was a boy, the other was a little girl. The little girl was playing among the rocks, and the boy was out holding court. And directly the boy heard his sister scream, and he wondered what was wrong, so he ran up to her and found out that a rattlesnake had bitten her. He could see the prints on the fangs right there on the top of her right hand. And so he simply put that hand in his mouth and began sucking the poison, rattlesnake poison, out of her bloodstream. And he kept on sucking until he had almost got every particle of that poison out of her. But he had a cut here on his lip, and he happened to swallow enough of that poison that a little later on he died himself, and he saved her life. You know, that's what Jesus Christ did for you and me 2,000 years ago. He gave his life and his blood that we might be redeemed. It says right here in this song, Thou hast redeemed us and brought us back to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation. Every nation, every color, every skin, doesn't matter what kind of a skin a man has stretched over his body, if he's born again, he will go to heaven. And that's what this song says. I remember back down in World War Number 2. Oh, I didn't go to World War Number 2. They put me in Classification 4D, and that was a low-down class, they said, so I didn't have to join the Army. But General Eisenhower was one day, or rather, it wasn't daylight, it was twilight. He was going out to inspect some troops in France and wondering how they were getting along. And he happened to be walking along to the side of a great big bus, 6 feet and 2 inches tall. And he noticed this fellow was shaking, and his voice was quivering. And he said, Say, fellow, aren't you just a little scared? And this guy looked down at General Eisenhower, and he recognized the general, and he said, Well, I was, but I'm not anymore. You know, my friends, when we have Jesus Christ in our fellowship, when he's walking by our side, as it were, there's no need of our being scared in the conflict that faces us. just as our Redeemer. He bought us with his own blood on Calvary. And that's what this song says right here, sung by these 24 elders. They had hearts, and they had golden bowls full of perfume, the prayers of the saints, that's what this chapter says. And so we have no right, my brethren, to be scared. Oh, all right. Now let's keep going here. Great people, these 24 elders cannot be angels. I realize that some people say they're angels, but these people wear crowns. They have crowns of victory on their heads, these 24 elders, and angels don't do that. Angels don't wear crowns. No crowns of any kind. And so these are not angels. They are redeemed saints, and they come out of this church age. They come out of Old Testament times. And so these people sit on thrones, but angels do not. All right. Now then, let's go down to chapter 5. We're about ready to get out of chapter 5. Let's go down to verse number 13. And every creature which is in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and such as are in the sea and all that are in them, heard I saying, blessing and honor and glory and power be unto him that sitteth upon the throne and unto the Lamb forever and ever. I call attention, brethren, especially to this verse, because there are people who tell us that hell is in the middle of the earth. And they are dogmatic regarding that teaching. But I'm not in agreement with that. I don't believe that hell is on the inside of the earth. And preachers will argue and say, well, now look at Mount St. Helens in the state of Washington. That thing is belching fire and smoke and ashes all over the state and nearly all over Idaho. And they say, well, hell must be in the center of the earth, or that mountain couldn't do that. And look at Krakatoa in the last century in the South Seas, blew its top, and you can't even find the island today. There must be a hell on the inside of this earth. Well, I just don't agree with that, Brian. Let's read this again. Let's read that verse again. And every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and down under the earth. That's the earth. That's a compound word there in the Greek, young men, young ladies, brethren and sisters. That's a compound word. And it means under, down, literally. Under, down. Well, we can't say it. That sounds odd in English to say under, down. My, what a lot. Father, get up here and talk like that. That's great. No, we say down, under. And my brother, there's a Hebrew word, Sheol. That means the same thing. Sheol. You've heard these old witnesses talking about Sheol. Sheol. They don't even know how to pronounce that word. Sheol. Sheol. That's all they can say. Sheol. That's all that word. Not Sheol. It's Sheol. Sure, that's a long O there. So Sheol means down under the earth. That's what it doesn't mean in the middle of the earth. It means down under the earth. It means the underworld, under the earth. So the Hebrews had that in Old Testament times, Sheol, down under the earth. That's the hell for the Hebrew people. And that's what John's talking about right here. He's not talking about hell in the middle of the earth. He's talking about hell down under the earth. And heaven is above, hell is below. Down under the earth, that's what he means right here. And those creatures in hell, my friends, under the earth, are glorifying God. And in this verse, that's what they're doing. Let's read that again now. Let's read that again. And every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and down under the earth and such as are in the sea and all that are in them heard I saying, blessing and honor and glory and power be unto him that sits on the throne. The entire creation and all that's in heaven and all that's in hell and all that's in the sea are honoring and praising God. Thank him this word. That's what the verse is talking about. Let's go back up to verse number 9. Now, I know this kind of sounds like a lopsided sermon tonight, but that's all right. We're studying. Bless verse number 9. And thou sang a new song, saying, thou art worthy. Worthy. I want to skip that word, worthy. That O-R-T-H-Y. Where is it? You know that word worthy is from a word which means to weigh down the scale. To weigh down the scale. That's the literal meaning of that word worthy. You know, Belshazzar was so light that he couldn't weigh down the scales when he was about to lose his kingdom. God said to him, "You're just too light, young man. You've been weighed in the balances and you've been found wanting. You're a sinner. You don't have Jesus Christ as a personal Savior. You're too light. You don't weigh enough, boy. You're lost. You're going to hell. Your kingdom's going to hell with you." Jesus Christ was heavy enough to weigh down the scale. And that's the reason he was given authority to open that seven-seal book that's about to be opened in the sixth chapter. He was heavy enough. His blood had been spilled. He'd done God's will. He was he was God's son, son of Abraham, son of David, yes, and the son of man. Never called the son of Mary.
All my brothers, you can check the scriptures all you please. Son of Mary. Go on now. Search it. Do it. Hunt. I won't ask you to hunt too hard because it's too hot. It's just too hot to work hard in this hot weather. If you can search the New Testament, the Old Testament, you won't find him called the Son of Mary.
Oh, there are lots of people in this world who'd like to find that, all right. And if they could just find one hint, oh, they'd devour that. They'd devour that like a lion devouring an antelope. Jesus Christ is heavy enough to weigh down the scales, and therefore he can open this seven-seal book that's about to be opened in this chapter. All right, now let's see what we can find in this sixth chapter. Let's go to the sixth chapter, brother. Let's go to the sixth chapter of Revelation. He has this seven-seal book in his hand, this scroll, well, Bert Strasser, have you ever been to Palestine? I think I'll pay his way some of these days. Just get him in there. My man doesn't know what he's missed. I remember the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem, brethren, and that great apron. We call it an apron, you know, that spread out from that Wailing Wall, a concrete platform. It seems to cover an acre or more. I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that thing covered an acre out there. And just full of Jews, you know, full of Jews standing up there before that Wailing Wall. And I remember when we were there, they had a scroll on great big long sticks. I mean, the stick would be as tall as a man. And those guys unrolled it and would reach from this wall to that wall over there, and from Genesis to Malachi on that scroll. Great big tall Hebrew letters. It took three men. It took one man on each end and then one man in the middle to hold that thing up. And those Jews got around that thing and boy, they gabbled in that Hebrew. They're reading the Psalms, reading the Old Testament from that scroll. Boy, I never did see in my life a scroll so long and so high. But they had it and they treated it with reverence, brethren. You'll never find another nation on this earth like the Jews. They respect the Old Testament with solemnity and reverence. You don't find Gentiles doing the Bible that way. Boy, and praying, those fellows would walk up to that wall and they would pray with big tears. They meant it. And if they hadn't known Jesus Christ as a personal Savior, brethren, God would have answered their prayers. But he's not answering their prayers. Paul sat there in a deep sleep. But those people are worshipful. Oh, how worshipful they are. And so this lamb right here. And that leads me to something else. And when the lamb opened one of the seals, this lamb, my brethren, is a lion. A lion. I remember reading in the Reader's Digest some months back. I've forgotten how many months back. But in the book section of the Reader's Digest, it told a story of a game warden in Nairobi, Kenya. He was a lover of wild animals, and he kept them. He was the keeper of game in that sanctuary near Nairobi, Kenya. And one day he was out there in the game preserve on that reservation, standing up, and one of the lions that he had raised from a cub, just played with it, you know, like a kitten, a house cat, raised that from a cub. This lion came at full speed behind him and knocked him over, and he landed on his face and stomach. And then that lion took his great claws and began at his shoulders and ripped him all the way down the back, the hips and the legs. And then again he did that. And that man started screaming. And one of the natives out there in the tent heard him screaming, and he grabbed a gun and came out and shot this lion. They rushed that boy to the hospital, and the doctor said we could see his kidneys. That lion had ripped him down to the kidneys. They saved his life. The boy took a lot of blood transfusions, and it took a lot of skin grafting to get that man back to normal living. The lion of the tribe of Judah. You know, a lamb is one thing. You don't find it ripping with its claws, because a lamb doesn't have any claws. And you don't find it ripping with its fangs, because a lamb doesn't have any fangs. But a lion is entirely different. And when Jesus Christ comes back here, boys and girls, he will be the lion of the tribe of Judah. And he will be roaring and ripping and tearing and killing as no other man has done that in past centuries. Adolf Hitler couldn't hold him alive. Napoleon, Alexander the Great, Nebuchadnezzar, no other world leader in past centuries can hold Jesus Christ. Not even a match. The lion of the tribe of Judah. I remember being one time on an African safari down there in Los Angeles. No, I think they, is that it? African safari? Something like it. Lion safari? Lion country? The ranger kept saying, roll up your windows, roll up. Man, it was hot. July, just like it is here. Hot. We roll our windows down and get those windows up. Well, we rolled them up the last time, and one of those big boys, the lions, came along, and he put his nose right up against the window, and he went up and down our car. Pressing that as hard as he could. I'm so glad he didn't break out of the window. I expected that creature to break a window, but he didn't. He went all the way from the back fender to the front fender, just rubbing it. Like a big house cat, you know. You know how a house cat will come up to you and rub you on the ankles? Yeah, all both sides. He wants petting. He wants loving. And he purrs and he rubs. That's just the way that lion did that car. On both sides. He went around on both sides. Oh, boy, I'm glad we had our windows rolled up. You don't fool the lion. Just let them stay in the zoo or somewhere else. There's a day coming when we can pet them and have good times with them, but not now. Not now. All right. Let's go to the sixth chapter, Bernie. Let's go to the sixth chapter of Revelation. And when the Lamb opens one of the seals of the seven sealed books, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. Noise of thunder. One of the four beasts said, those four beasts, I should have called attention to them, but I didn't. Now, they're real enough priests, Brian. They are called living creatures. Brother Sabanis back there can vouch for that. They're called living creatures. We get two from that word, and we get zoology and zoological and words of that kind from that Greek word. It means just a living creature, a creature that has life. And he has eyes all up and down him on the inside and outside from his, they are odd-looking creatures. But anyway, one of these living creatures said that in that second verse, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, one of the four living creatures saying, come. It's Dr. John now. Come. And I saw, and behold, a white horse. Now, stop right there, Brent. Never in my life have I been on a white horse. Now, how many of you people have ridden a white horse? Raise your hand, please. Those of you who have been on a white horse. There's one lady back there. Two ladies. Here's a man. A brother. You been on the highway? Did you have any fat, sleep, drink,
yes,
or
mammal?
Yeah. A white horse, you know that. They strike, they strike admiration. I don't know what it is about a white horse, but you wash him clean, you make him sleek and shiny, he's fat, and he's full of zip and life and spirit, and you love a horse of that kind. He's white from the tip of his nose to the tip of his tail. Beautiful, beautiful animal. Yeah, and when he's running at full speed, that nose, you know, will flare and widen as he draws in the air and blows it out. Beautiful animal. White horse. That's that. Did you have a name, Will? Name? Name of your white horse? He's just common white horse. I saw and beheld a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow. No arrow is mentioned, right? Usually when bows are mentioned, arrows are mentioned, but not here. No arrow. Well, what's the matter? He comes in by flattery. No, that's right. He comes in as a peacemaker. That's the way Adolf Hitler captured Germany. And before World War Number Two, he came in as a peacemaker. You can read that in history. Yes, sir. Everybody, well, I wrote history. Those guys around him, those beer hounds and murderers around him, said, we want peace. Oh, we're going to have peace. Yes, sir. And Neville Chamberlain, when he went to Hitler in 1938, he said, Mr. Chamberlain, all we want is peace. We're going to have peace. Oh, and he was making ready for war right then. The munition factories in Germany were going 24 hours a day, making ammunition and guns, getting ready to fight. If it hadn't been for America, he would have laid all of Europe and all of England and all of Russia. You know, somebody said, and I wish it had happened, somebody said if they should have let Adolf Hitler alone so that he would have beat the blood out of that bloody Joe Stalin. And he would have done it if this country had left him alone. We had to help Russia $11 billion worth of armament before he could quit Adolf Hitler. Well, I don't know why I got started on that way, so I'm chasing rabbits now. He that sat on him had a bow. Yeah, he's coming in as a peacemaker. And a crown of victory was given unto him. And he went forth conquering and to conquer. That's what Adolf Hitler did, my friends. Adolf Hitler, when he started his Blitzkrieg in 1940 and 41, he went across Holland. He went across Belgium and France. He went across Eastern Europe, and he went on into Russia. He went into Norway and Sweden and Denmark and those Scandinavian countries. He went like lightning, and nobody could stop him. And it took this country about 3 years to get ready to meet that man and to meet the Japanese. And so this man comes in as a peacemaker. Yes, I want peace. Oh, yeah, you see, I've got a bow, but I don't have any arrow. Somebody says, this is Jesus Christ. No, this is not Jesus Christ. This is the Antichrist. This is the great man the world is expecting today. I heard on the radio just last week, that in order to have the problems of the world solved, we need one man to rule the nation. They actually said that on KNX. All the news radio stations coming out of Los Angeles every day, 24 hours a day, they said that we need one man to rule all the so that the problems of the world can be solved. Well, that sounds like the Antichrist, and we're living in that day of chaos and turmoil and fear, and men are topsy-turvy. Even President Jimmy Carter cannot solve all the problems that are piled on his desk, and so old Brasenell says, well, I'll just forget the whole business, go down to the Black Sea, and I'll fish, and I'll catch all the sturgeon I can catch, and I'll stuff myself until I can eat no more sturgeon. Now, that's the way Mr. Brasenell solved his problem. You know, that's the way Jimmy Carter solves his. Especially when it comes to the Arabs and the Jews. They can't handle those Arabs and Jews. They talk about the Camp David Accord. They have no accord, friends. They didn't solve anything at Camp David. All they did was spend your tax money and mine and have a lot of Israel and to Egypt, they didn't solve a thing. Isaiah said that when Jesus Christ comes back here, he will solve the problem that arise between Egypt and Israel.
Christ is the only one who can do it.
Amen.
Not Jimmy Carter. Not somebody else. All right, we find the man of sin right here, brother. Man of sin, a crown was given unto him, a victor's crown. And he went forth conquering and to conquer. They couldn't stop him. They wanted to. They tried. But he ran over nation after nation, roughshod. Roughshod. That's the Antichrist, the man of sin. Now let's go to verse number 3. Verse number 3. Chapter 6. Verse number 3. We'll look at it in just a minute. And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come." Come on, John. Let's see what's going to happen when this seal is opened up. And there went out another horse that was red. And power was given unto him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword. Take peace from the earth. Oh, how men talk about peace today. I said that last night. I want to repeat tonight what I said last night. Peace. No books have been written about peace. And no manuscripts have been written about peace by the men of the nation. And no words have been spoken about peace than at any other time in the world's centuries. And so little is being done to bring peace to the nation. Yeah, that's what this second horseman does. Verse number 3, it opened the second seal. There went out another horse that was red, a red horse. Well, a red horse is more common than a white horse. And authority was given unto him that sat down on to take peace from the earth, not merely from America, not merely from Germany or the Holy Land or Russia, but from the earth, brethren, that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword. Great sword right there represents war, and that's worldwide war. World War number 2, we thought that was a worldwide war. And today, America is shuddering from her ankles to her shoulders, fearing that the Russians are going to start World War number 3. Oh, let's be careful. Let's not offend the Russians. Let's be careful. Please, let's be careful. Don't say anything. If you ruffle the feelings, we might capture Saudi Arabia. We'll lose our oil well. And that dollar and a half oil we can't afford to admit. Oh, we can't afford to lose. Let's be careful. Oh, you know, those Russians are touchy. Yes, they're explosive. And we do not want to start World War number 3. Well, there was, if they killed one another, that was given to him a great sword. And look at verse number 5. And when he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come and see." And I beheld, and lo, a black horse. He that sat on him had a pair of promises in his hand. I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures say, "A measure of wheat for a penny, and 3 measures of barley for a penny, and see thou hurt not the oil and the wine." A black horse. My friends, famine. Famine always follows war, and you know that. Wherever you find war, you're going to find famine. You're going to find starvation. You'll find disease. You'll find people loading up the hospitals and loading up the wagons to get ready to go to the hospital. Famine, and that's what we find right here. This balance, these scales, a pair of scales, balances in his hand. And a voice in the midst of the four beasts, the four living creatures saying, "A measure of wheat for a penny." Now then, somebody said that measure right there is a little less than a quart, and that penny is a dollar and a half. I don't know. I'm just taking the word of some other man. I don't know. Maybe you have a different measurement. Maybe you have a different value on the money. But they say that that measure right there is a little less than a quart of wheat that you pay a dollar and a half for. What's wheat today, Brad? $7 a bushel? I'm asking for information. I really do. I want to know how much per bushel do you pay for wheat today? About half that? $4? About $4 a bushel. $3.50? Thank you. $3.50 a bushel. Well, this is $1.50, but a little less than a quart. That's pretty high, isn't it? Pretty high. This barley now, this barley, that belongs to the poor. know, the wheat belongs to the rich, barley belongs to the poor. That the poor man can't afford the barley. I mean, the wheat, but he can't afford the barley. That's what this is talking about. 3 measures of barley for a penny, and see it all hurt not the oil and the wine. Now, that's the rich man's fare, too. That's his menu, the oil and the wine. All right, now let's go to verse number 7. And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast, the living creature, say, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a pale horse. You know, the horse is green. We get the word chlorophyll from that Greek word right there. It's green, a green horse. Now, I don't, you may have seen a green horse, but I've never seen a green horse. Never. I don't know. Green horse? Yeah, that's, I think it was laid out on that dress back there, the rich green. I don't know. I may have missed that color. I'm colorblind. But this is a green horse. A green horse. Yeah. And his name that sat on him was death, and hell followed with him, and power was given unto him over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, with hunger, and with death, and with the beasts of the earth. Fourth part of the earth. All right. Now then, my brethren, let's look at something right here. For the fourth part of the earth. I don't know how true this is. I don't know how true this is, Vernon, but U.S. News and World Report says that there are four. There are 4 billion people living on the face of the earth today. Now that's what U.S. News and World Report said. I don't know. 4 billion people living. Well, now if Jesus Christ delays his coming until the year 2000. There are going to be more than 4 billion people on the earth. Well, people are multiplying rapidly today. All right, 1/4 of 4 billion then. 1/4 of 4 billion. Does somebody want to? Come on here, somebody figure this out right quickly. How much would 1/4 of 4 billion be? 1 billion? That's right. 1 billion. Thank you. 1 billion. That's it. All right. Are we done? Right here under this seal, the opening of this seal, now if that is right, 12 billion people, and 1/4 of 4 billion would be 1 billion, that means that 1 billion people will lose their lives, and this seal is open. Okay? Let's read that again. Verse number 7. And he had opened the fourth seal. I heard the fourth living creature say, "Come," and I looked, and behold, a green horse. That's the color of death. Yeah, that's the color of death. And his name that sat on him was death. And hell, that is the underworld, followed with him. Went along with him. That's what it means. And power or authority was given unto them, unto death and the underworld, over the fourth part of the earth, to kill with the sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beasts of the earth. You know, the beasts of the earth, my brother, beasts of the earth don't kill people in such a wholesale fashion today. But some of these days, the devil is going to be turned loose in such a way that he will invade the beasts, as it were, and send them on killing campaigns. And the beasts of the earth will destroy a lot of human beings in the Great Tribulation period. That's what this is all about. Somebody says this means the Antichrist and the false prophet. They're the beasts that will destroy. No, I think this is 4-footed animals right here. That's what I think. 4-footed animals. Like a lion, a tiger, a leopard, or something like that. 4-footed animal. That's what I think. To kill with the sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beasts of the earth. 1 billion people. That's a lot of people, my friends, in this world. A lot of people. All right. We're going to stop right there. We're going to stop right there, brother. And we'll see about something else. I want us to stand together at this time. Let we all stand, please. Go to the phone leader. Come down to the front, please. And piano player. I want us to sing. Song number 377.
And if you're lost tonight, realize you're lost. Will you come, give the pastor your hand, telling him that you're lost, that you want to be saved? That's your thing, just saw, just as I am. Not one plea, just thy blood was shed for me. As we sing this final song, will you come?
Brother Hubbard, would you walk back here? Brother, thank you.